Michael Patrick Smith is a folk singer and playwright currently based in central Kentucky. He is the author of the new book, The Good Hand, a memoir of work, brotherhood, and transformation in an American boomtown. The book is a saga of fear, danger, exhaustion, suffering, loneliness, and grit that explores the struggles of America's marginalized boomtown workers, the cast-off, seemingly disposable men who do an indispensable job that few would exalt, oil field hands who, in the age of climate change, put the gas in our tanks and the food in our homes. Smith, who had pursued theater and played guitar in New York, observes this world with a critical eye, yet he comes to love his coworkers. The book is just a fascinating look at this world and his world, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Patrick Smith to the program. Michael, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Joe. I appreciate it.
So give me the timeline here. At what point were you doing this work, and at what point did you say, okay, I would like to write about it?
So I moved out to North Dakota. I was living in Brooklyn, New York, and I moved out there in 2013, which was ended up being sort of the tail end of the Bakken oil boom. I got out there, and then, you know, while I was there, I guess I was writing to friends and sending emails home to people that I knew, and the experience was so startling. You know, Williston was a town that had about 10,000 people in it, and a few years later, while I was there, there were 30 to 40 to some said 50 and 60,000 people. It was too many to count, you know, so it was kind of like this wild gold rush experience. And as I was emailing my buddies on the East Coast in California, yeah. The response I got was pretty amazing. And I just kept writing and kept sending these emails. And by the time I left, I'd written a couple hundred pages. And I just felt like I had a beautiful story. And so I decided to stick with it.
For you, you write a lot about not only your experiences and not only your relationships, but about boomtowns themselves. Talk a little bit about the state of the boomtown as you come into this story in 2013.
So I met a lot of guys. I was surprised by this phenomenon. And a lot of the guys that I met in Williston, North Dakota, had come from Elko, Nevada, where there'd been a silver boom that had gone bust. And then they moved to Williston, and they were working the oil boom there. Williston went bust in about 2015, not too long after I left. And some folks ended up moving down to Texas to the Permian boom. I was surprised to find that throughout history, you know, there's stories of the gold rush or the biggest ones.
Right.
But once oil was really discovered and people started drilling for oil in eastern Pennsylvania in the 1860s, immediately that became a boom town. And there's been these boom towns popping up as a kind of not talked about part of our economy. But they're more common than you'd think. And they all sort of have certain characteristics, which is a population boom. And, you know, oftentimes it's the people that move in are young men, you know, looking for work or hoping to send money home to their families. And when you put thousands of young men into a place with nothing to do but dangerous jobs that might knock their heads off, organized crime, the drug industry, and prostitution follow right after that, you know. So it causes this sort of the cliche is that it's like the Wild West, right? But it's not, for shorthand, it's not the most inaccurate comparison.
You were there for how long?
About 10 months in total. 10 to 11 months.
And as you read in the book, there's a great brotherhood there. So talk to us a little bit about that, of what it is like to be working so hard with so many people at your side.
Yeah, for me, it's one of the big themes in the book, because I didn't agree with or share a similar worldview with a lot of guys that I met. We had political arguments and, you know, just personality clashes and this kind of thing. But when you're doing a hard job And when you're doing it for what you believe is the benefit, it's a good job, that it has meaning to yourself and to the world. Those differences disappear pretty quickly. And that's something that, you know, in these very divisive times, I hope people would take away from the book. For me, you know, we were working in 14-hour days, and in the summer it got as hot as 99, 100 degrees. You're wearing a dark blue fire-resistant jumpsuit. In the winter, I worked in weather as cold as negative 38 degrees. It was so cold you could feel the liquid in my eyeballs freeze.
Oh, gross.
And the work itself can... Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. And then, you know, the work itself, as you're working on big machines and swinging metal around, people can get hurt, and people get killed out there. It's thankfully I never witnessed anybody really getting damaged, but I had some very, very close calls myself, and it did, it led me to really love and respect people who I in other ways just didn't have very much in common with.
You talk about the excessive hours. What were you actually doing? Your job at that point was what?
I was what's called a swamper, which is basically a crane rigger. I worked on specialized trucks. So oil rigs, like, you can think of it as like a skyscraper, right? They're very big, 160 feet tall, made up of steel and metal. And they drill in one location for about 2.5 months until the oil gets flowing. And then the skyscraper-sized oil derrick gets pulled apart into these big pieces, like Lego pieces that are the size of fire trucks and RVs. And it was my job to work with the crane to basically throw the chains and the hooks on these big pieces, try to keep everything level, try not to bust anybody up or damage the equipment or hurt anybody, and get the pieces set on haul trucks, and then we drive to another location and put them all back together.
You talk about the themes of the book, but one of them is also just how hard you all were working, about the value of meaningful work.
Yeah, I've found, and for me it's the same, you know, it's the same with working on writing the book, which is that I get a lot of personal value from being keeping my hands occupied and working hard, and also working with an element of, you know, there's personal responsibility within the context of the greater good. And there's a lot of arguments about whether or not we should get off fossil fuels. And I do believe that a transition to a greener economy is the way to go. At the same time, as we are right now, these jobs are absolutely essential to keeping us fed and keeping us moving around. And so I see it as, you know, any kind of, whether it's an EMT job or, you know, people who are plumbers and carpenters, I hope that these people that do these essential, important jobs feel some real pride when they read my book.
When it comes to, I mean, you obviously know the controversial nature of what you were doing. Did that ever enter into the conversations? Did that come down to you at any point?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that the people I met out there, and some of these guys hadn't finished high school, and some of them had been in and out of jail and prison and stuff, but they were some of the most educated people I know when it came to energy extraction. So I learned a lot. And the controversial nature is sort of just is what it is. I mean, I felt at the time my calculus was sort of, I'm using petroleum as much as everybody. It's in my clothes. It's in the fertilizer that grows my food. It's in the paint on my walls and the finish on my floor. And I'm already a part of this society that we can view, that maybe you view as morally compromised. And so my decision to go out there was sort of in spite of that. I guess I didn't see that. I just figured, well, I'm already consuming the stuff, to be kind of at the heart of it, felt to me almost a little bit like an obligation if I'm going to have an opinion about this stuff.
When you take a job like this, as I mentioned in the introduction, I mean, you want to be music as a passion, theater as a passion. So this is not your choice, but as you're doing it, do you feel it's your only option, or are you still exploring what else is out there?
Well, I ran out of money, you know, so you run out of money, you're in a place and, you're given the opportunity to do a job. You can't quit the job. And, that was the thing that kept me out there, for a period of time. And then as I sort of came to value the, guys I worked with, it also became really important to me to be good at the job. I didn't want to roll out of town having not been good at the job. It was maybe a little obsessive of me, but that was important.
And music was still important to you. Even as you're doing this, music was important to you.
Yeah, music is so intrinsic to my life. And I think, you know, I don't even think of it in terms of selling records or playing big gigs. It's being a musician is a worldview for me, and playing folk songs and carrying along that tradition is as much a part of my life, no matter what I do, you know, whether it's working in an office, or writing a book or working in the oil fields. It's just a place of joy and a way to connect with all kinds of people. And it, you know, it transcends so many of these divisions. Everybody can sit back and enjoy a good song.
when you finish after 10 months, then what's next? I mean, and you say, okay, this is something I've done. I assume you don't race to go back to it, and yet it's something you've done that you could, right?
Yeah, you know, I left. When I left, I moved back to Maryland, which is where I still have a lot of family and a good amount of friends. And I thought that I'd be able to find a job really quickly, having done, you know, what is literally one of the hardest jobs on the planet. But I really had a lot of trouble finding a job when I got back to Maryland. And I thought quite a bit about returning to the oil field. Like I mentioned, it wasn't long before it went bust, and there weren't those jobs either. I also, you know, the danger of it is one of the reasons I left. I had two very, very close calls in one day that left me pretty rattled. The idea of bleeding out in the tundra of the oil field became a terrifying vision for me. And so that was part of the reason I left. And there's only so much a person's body can do that job.
And as you write about, I mean, that part of those tight bonds that you have with the people that you're working with, I assume comes from that inherent danger of what you're doing every day.
Yeah, you have to really, really learn to rely on people when the work it requires that level of precision, because it is so incredibly dangerous.
Well, Michael Patrick Smith is our guest. The name of the new book is The Good Hand, a memoir of work, brotherhood, and transformation in an American boomtown. The book is published by Viking. Michael, we wish you all the luck in the world. I thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I do appreciate it.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Michael Patrick Smith is the author of The Good Hand, a memoir of work, brotherhood, and transformation in an American boomtown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.